Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next month's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Mick Werkraut.
And today we are on our second to last episode in our Oscar Contender series this season. We will be covering the international documentary and animated feature categories, as well as all three shorts categories, live action, animated, and documentary. I love this episode every year because we get to spend time talking about films that we don't really get to discuss during the year, just with how the release schedule works and award ceremonies. So it'll be fun to dive into some different films today.
Yeah, and I know we always say Best Actress is our favorite category, which we covered last week, but I think some of these categories today are also my favorite categories because of that, because they're either harder to see or their releases are different, or we don't get to talk about them as much in a way that we think they should be covered in the main categories, not just in, say, international feature or documentary feature. So I'm excited for today's episode too. And later in the episode with the shorts categories, we'll let you know where you can watch those if those are streaming online.
And if you've been following our contender series so far this season, you know we go category by category, nominee by nominee. But today, because we're talking about films as a whole and not individual components of those films, we'll be having the conversation a bit more collectively for each category. So talking about some themes that stood out for us, what our favorite nominations are, just a little bit more generally instead of getting into the nitty-gritty. And we'll do those with the shorts too. And for feature categories, we'll be sharing a write-in vote and who we think should win. And for shorts categories, we will just be sharing who we think should win.
Yeah, so let's start right off with international feature. This is one of our shortlist categories, so they narrow it down from a list of 15 that the members that vote on choosing them have to watch all of them. And then from there, we get the five nominees. So this year, we had Emilia Perez, Flo, The Girl with the Needle, I'm Still Here, and The Seed of the Sacred Fig. Our first nominee, Emilia Perez from France, and I know we've mentioned this on multiple Contenders episodes, but
every single one so far.
The description here, cartel leader Emilia enlists unappreciated lawyer Rita to help fake her death so that she can finally live authentically as her true self. This was directed by Jacques Audiard. And in terms of France's history at the Oscars, France is the only country that has submitted a film every year since the creation of the award in 1956, and also the only country which has been nominated at more than half of the ceremonies. So overall, it's had 72 submissions, 42 nominations, and 12 wins.
Our next nominee is Flo from Latvia. Flo was also nominated for Animated Feature. Description here, the world seems to be coming to an end, teeming with the vestiges of a human presence. Cat is a solitary animal, but as its home is devastated by a great flood, he finds refuge on a boat populated by various species and will have to team up with them despite their differences. In the lonesome boat sailing through mystical, overflowed landscapes, they navigate the challenges and dangers of adapting to this new world. This was directed by Gints Zilbalotis, and Latvia at the Oscars, they've had 16 submissions, but this is their first shortlist inclusion and nomination.
Next, we have The Girl with the Needle from Denmark. Description here, in Copenhagen, young pregnant Caroline takes on a position as a wet nurse for an older woman named Dagmar to help support herself. Dagmar operates a clandestine adoption agency under the guise of a candy shop, assisting disadvantaged mothers place their unwanted newborns in foster homes. Caroline grows close to Dagmar, but she is soon faced with the nightmarish reality she unwittingly entered. This is directed by Magnus von Horn, and Denmark's history at the Oscars, they've had 62 submissions, 15 nominations, and 4 wins.
Next, we have I'm Still Here from Brazil. Description, a mother is forced to reinvent herself when her family's life is shattered by an act of arbitrary violence during the tightening grip of a military dictatorship in Brazil in 1971. This was directed by Walter Salles, And Brazil at the Oscars, they have had 54 submissions and 5 nominations so far, but no wins. Hopefully that will change this year.
I really hope so too. Our final nominee is The Seed of the Sacred Fig from Germany. Description here, investigating judge Iman grapples with paranoia amid political unrest in Tehran. When his gun vanishes, he suspects his wife and daughters, imposing draconian measures that strain family ties as societal rules crumble. This was directed by Mohamed Rasalouf, and Germany's history at the Oscars, they've had 34 submissions, 14 nominations, and 3 wins. So how do you feel about this collection of 5 nominees as a whole? Do you see any common thread through them? What did you think of these 5?
I really like this group of nominees, except for Emilia Perez, honestly. I really like the other 4 and think that they really stand above that film. But I think what we're seeing here in this collection of nominees is something we do see year to year, which is that these films are often about very serious, timely subject matters, sometimes political violence in a particular country, or you leave the theater with questions and you're ruminating on the various topics and performances and issues that the filmmaker wants to include. I think that's why it's always one of the best categories at the Oscars. I think we get some of our strongest films that we'll see here. And I'm happy that this year, for instance, I'm Still Here also got nominations for Fernanda Torres in Best Actress and in Best Picture. We also have Flo, like I said, in Animated Feature. And of course, Emilia Perez's double-digit nominations. But I do wish that the Academy would continue to look at these films or look at the films that are eligible for International Feature when they're considering acting nominations and writing nominations, cinematography. The Girl with the Needle should absolutely be in that category. So I think that's changing and it is getting better as the Academy is becoming more international, but I, as a whole, really do like most of these films and think that they're very different too. And you can really see each filmmaker's style and voice in the particular project. What do you think? I know this is one of your favorite categories too.
Yeah, I really like these 5 as well. Just as a collection, like you said, timely, important subject matters, really in every single one. And we've been talking about a lot of these films in some capacity for the majority of the year. Months ago, you mentioned The Seed of the Sacred Fig and, you know, thinking that we would be seeing that in writing and some other categories, and that didn't happen. But the fact that we were talking about these movies and that they are showing up here, I think shows how important they are. That film, extremely difficult to watch, but also so important, and in a similar way that I'm Still Here is very difficult to watch and so important and timely. And just looking at history repeating itself, 1971 feeling like 2025, and I'm glad that so many people are talking about them. We have a lot of love for I'm Still Here, and I really am hoping that that can push it over the edge in terms of potentially winning, being Brazil's first win in this category. But I think, like you, I would be pretty happy with most of these. I think the surprise was Flo, and I would definitely recommend some of the other shortlisted films even for people to watch. I was kind of hoping for Kneecap. I mean, that did really well with a lot of British awards. So check out Kneecap. I know that one's on Netflix. You really liked Vermilio from Italy. And there were some others that had a really big release, Touch from Iceland. And I know we were hoping How to Make Millions Before Grandma Dies from Thailand would make it. I haven't seen it yet, but I will be seeking that out when it's available. So overall, very happy with how this category turned out. I think we could have been in a more dire situation, I would say, than we are.
I think so, too. And I like what you said about I'm Still Here and The Seed of the Sacred Fig having thematic connections, because as I think about both of those films, I do think about how, in different ways, but it's still there as an idea, that the actions of a father how those can affect the women in his family, specifically his wife or his daughters. I feel like those are themes that really come up in I'm Still Here and The Seed of the Sacred Fig. I think the big difference with those films, and there are quite a few, but in I'm Still Here, like I mentioned on our acting episode when we talked about Fernanda Torres, Salas gives you time with the family to see how close-knit they are, which makes the secrets of the father or his activity and his ultimate arrest feel that much more gutting, I think, and hard to watch. And Torres's performance, it makes it shine even more. And in The Seed of the Sacred Fig, there's all this secrecy from the beginning. The family feels very disconnected. The daughters feel very separate in their ideologies from their parents. But what's cool about how the mother character is used in that film is that she slowly starts to separate herself from her husband and see her daughter's perspectives, which I think is a really cool detail. So I would recommend both of those as political capsules of sorts of either a time or a specific country. But it's interesting how oceans separate them and decades separate them, but they're both still so timely and relevant today.
And in a very different way, I mean, we see a lot of apocalyptic films nowadays, but Flo, it's an animated film. There's no dialogue, but something that I really liked, and I think why maybe it's been connecting with so many people too, is Sean Fennessy tweeted about being able to watch this with his young daughter, connecting over this film, over these animals, and being able to discuss maybe harder topics through something that adults and kids can watch alike. Talking about climate change or friendships, these animals being different but having to work together for a common goal to survive. It makes me want to rewatch this movie.
I absolutely love Flo. And I also saw Sean's comment about it and how his daughter really liked it. And I started thinking about, because it's, Flo is essentially a silent film. We don't have talking animals like we do in a lot of animated films. And previously, this category was foreign language film. And I think that that's why a lot of people thought that Flo might not get in, because you're not hearing a language other than English when you're watching the film. You're not really hearing any language at all. But because it's international feature, it's that country's submission, it's the themes, it's the experience, it's really the design of the movie and how it makes you feel. I think that when I watched Flo, I started crying from the beginning because I have a cat. I have a dark gray cat. So I was, you know, instantly just hooked on this cat's journey and watching this poor creature in peril. But I really, I think, just loved, like you said, seeing these themes of climate change, for instance, and seeing how these different animals would connect. And I think there is this really beautiful, mystical, magical quality to it that I really loved. And it feels hopeful, right? In that the world around us might be crumbling, but the only thing that we can do is really join together to get through it all. So that's a good message, I think, for kids and for adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you again, I know you talked about The Girl with the Needle and how much you love that movie, but tell our listeners again, maybe who haven't heard, why you love this movie so much.
I feel like I've mentioned it on every Contenders episode, maybe. I think it was my write-in for Sound. I just love all of the elements of this movie. It's extremely dark. And I think going into the movie, I didn't really know what to expect. I know we had talked about it early on in the year. So I think for it being based on a true story, I was just so mesmerized by it. It's in black and white, but there are a lot of layers to it. And I feel like from the very beginning, there's this intro sequence that reminded me of Persona, that you just know you're getting into something almost evil. And I think just being so consumed by the slow burn of it all made me love it even more.
You talking about the imagery that reminded you of Persona, that was my thing with it, is that from the very beginning, from those first images that you see, it kind of grabs you by the throat and does not let go. This is a grim, deeply unsettling movie. I recommend it, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again, and that's okay.
So what would your write-in vote be for the category?
My write-in vote would be All We Imagine as Light, Payal Kapadia's film, which should have been India's submission for international feature. I think this film is just pretty remarkable. It's so delicate and beautiful in its relationship and portrayal of these two women at very different periods in their lives and how they respond to love, to their careers. But I think I really just loved its style and the visual imagery that Kapadia creates of Mumbai. And she does this thing in it that is, this is going to be an odd comparison, but people listening who are familiar with my taste in film will say, oh, of course. The way that she brings in city life and real people living in that time and through that experience reminds me a lot of what Warren Beatty does in Reds, actually, in bringing this honest perspective to the world of the characters, even though the world of the film is fictional, but it's just a really interesting choice that she makes, and I can't wait to see what she does next. What would your write-in vote be?
Mine is for Armand, which is from Norway. I mentioned this a little bit with Renate Reinsve. I loved her performance. I think this movie has a lot of similarities too in subject matter to Germany's The Teacher's Lounge from last year in schools' treatment of kids and how they deal with kids' relationships with each other, more so here, I would say, than that one last year. But it's another taut, explosive nail biter that I really fell into. I, again, loved Renata here. I think she holds the movie together really well. And it does, in a similar way to Flow, that I really enjoyed it, adds this interesting artistic element later on to express how she's feeling inside related to the other parents. So if you can watch that one, I would also recommend Armand.
And who do you think should win?
My favorite two here are The Seed of the Sacred Fig and I'm Still Here. I think they're both incredibly important movies that, looking back on 2024, we should be talking about them more. So I'm hoping there's a chance for one of those. What do you think should win?
I'm going to go with I'm Still Here. I like a number of these, like we've said, but for me, I'm Still Here is the one that when I look at this category and think of which movie had the greatest sense of urgency to it, that's I'm Still Here. And I think that is all because of Salas's vision and the execution of the film. He is pretty great at political stories, but here I think what makes this one pretty exceptional is Fernando Torres's performance. So I'm going with I'm Still Here. Next up, we have documentary feature. Our precursors here, we have the Cinema Eye Honors and the IDA Awards. This category also has a short list. So the documentary branch will choose 5 nominees from that short list. This year, our nominees are Black Box Diaries, No Other Land, Porcelain War, Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat, and Sugarcane. Black Box Diaries, our nominees here are Shiori Ito, Eric Nayari, and Hannah Akvilin. These are all first-time nominees. Black Box Diaries is about a journalist named Shiori Ito who investigates her own sexual assault, seeking to prosecute the high-profile offender. Her quest becomes a landmark case exposing Japan's outdated judicial and societal systems.
Our next nominee is No Other Land, and those nominated for the film include Basil Adra, Rachel Zor, Hamdan Bilal, and Yuval Abraham. They are all first-time nominees. This film is made by a Palestinian-Israeli collective that shows the destruction of the occupied West Bank's Masafer Yatta by Israeli soldiers and the alliance which develops between the Palestinian activist Basil and Israeli journalist Yuval.
Our next nominees, Porcelain War. Our nominees here are Brendan Belomo, Slavia Leontiev, Aniela Sidorska, and Paula Dupre-Pesman. They are all first-time nominees. Under Roaring Fighter Jets, Ukrainian artists Slava, Anya, and Andrei choose to stay behind. Defiantly finding beauty amid destruction, they show that although it's easy to make people afraid, it's hard to destroy their passion for living.
The next nominee, Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat. Its nominees include Johan Grimmenprez, who's a first-time nominee, Don Milius, also a first-time nominee, and Remy Grilletti, and this is their second nomination. It's about jazz and decolonization and how they are entwined in this historical roller coaster that rewrites the Cold War episode that led musicians Abby Lincoln and Max Roach to crash the UN Security Council in protest against the murder of Patrice Lumumba.
And our last nominee, Sugar Cane. Our nominees here are Julian Brave Noise Cat. This is his first nomination. Emily Cassie. This is her first nomination. And Kellen Quinn. This is his second nomination. This film follows an investigation into abuse and missing children at a Native American residential school that sparks a reckoning on the nearby Sugarcane Reserve. Lots of heavy films here, as always. We always see that in documentary feature. Lots of important stories that are being told here. But what do you think of this category as a whole?
I like this category because I end up learning about either periods in history or just important timely matters that I don't think I would experience otherwise. So I think for these people to be telling their own stories, you learn a lot about people around the world. From Black Box Diaries, you learn about Japan's treatment of sexual assault and women and how it's so outdated. And to see that Shiori directed this herself, goes through her entire case, this 8-year saga of having to constantly talk about how she was assaulted and raped and drugged. And it's just unrelenting and it's awful, but it's also empowering at the same time. And then in No Other Land, you have the current Palestinian crisis. And I think the most interesting aspect with it is approaching it with Palestinians and Israelis interacting together and seeing that conflict firsthand. Porcelain War, another film like last year, we had 20 Days in Mariupol, which won documentary feature. This kind of continues that with the war happening in Ukraine, but it has a different approach through art. You end up seeing this couple and these people surviving who are artists. So it takes a different approach there. Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat, I really enjoyed. It's a longer film, but there's so much history there that they're talking about in terms of Africa and how the United States have interfered politically. And I thought bringing in the jazz musicians and seeing how Louis Armstrong was a part of that, it just, I had no idea that that's what happened in the Cold War. And in Sugarcane, seeing these indigenous people abused by the church and really just seeing their lives destroyed by the way they were treated at Sugarcane. These stories are awful, but it's also important to talk about them and to see these. So it's hard to say maybe that you really love these films, but they are eye-opening in a very big way.
Definitely. And yeah, what you said about all of those films, I really agree with. I think Black Box Diaries, like you said, it's difficult to watch this woman go through this and talk about her experience with assault, but I found it so inspirational and moving when you just see one person in a documentary really fight for something. I really like documentaries like that, and I felt really connected to her and her fight really for personal justice. And I think these films are all really different also in how they're constructed and the types of documentaries that they are. I'm going to wait to talk about No Other Land in a minute, just spoiler alert for what my choice is, but I think that that is one of those that just wallops you, and you cannot pick a better documentary, I think, to watch right now. But as far as the political documentaries go, I mean, these are all political in different ways, but what's really interesting about Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat for me was that it throws you right in. There's no primer of sorts to orient you to the politics of the 1960s and how these connect to these American jazz musicians. It just throws you in. And I love the editing. I love the style. And I think it's a really radical film in how it talks about decolonization and neo-imperialism and the politics of the former Belgian Congo. But the jazz is a soundtrack to the film. And that, it just like the title says, which is a great title, by the way, But at the same time, it lifts up these artists like Louis Armstrong and Nina Simone. And I think that's just such a unique way to tell this story. Sugarcane, I thought, was a great companion piece to Nickel Boys and to Killers of the Flower Moon previously. Scorsese, of course, introduced the idea of Catholicism in Killers of the Flower Moon, too. But here, it picks up those themes, but then with this school, looking at the abuse, looking at these children that went missing, I thought a lot about Nickel Boys and what that film examines. So I think that Sugarcane is actually a really good companion piece to Rommel Ross's film, too.
So what would your write-in vote be for the category?
My write-in vote would be Dahomey, which I am obsessed with. I love that film. It totally caught me off guard when I saw it. I highly recommend it. It's on Mubi, and I think it just really experiments with what you can do with documentary filmmaking. And it's about these artifacts from Dahomey in West Africa and how they were taken from their land, from their original place, by these French colonists and displayed in museums, auction houses across Paris. And it follows the artifacts returned home. I think the way that Diop, the director, she personifies the art here is something unlike anything I've ever seen before. So it's a pretty short documentary too. It's less than 90 minutes. I highly recommend checking it out if you're interested in art and in repatriation, in cultural ownership too. It's a pretty incredible documentary. What would your write-in vote be?
So mine is for a nominee we talked about in Original Song, but it's Elton John, Never Too Late. I think in doing this series and in having to watch every movie, sometimes we find movies that we don't like or are surprised by. And this is one that shocked me with how much I loved it as a documentary about a musician and how they use his music to tell the story behind Elton John, who he is as a person, how he was so depressed and alone when he was at his peak. And it's just remarkable to see, you know, the star that he was and still is today, and his power in lifting up other LGBTQ singers also through his podcast. So I think for covering such a long span of time, it does it in such an entertaining way and uses his music really well.
And what do you think should win?
I think No Other Land should win. It's one of the most important movies of the year, and is a story that from its filmmaking and how this movie is framed is just something that you can't ignore. It's a movie that sparks conversation for a reason, and it's been winning a lot of awards. I'm happy that we have been talking about it so much, but because of what's happening right now in Palestine, I think it should continue to be in the conversation. What do you think should win?
I'm with you. I think No Other Land should win too. When I saw this film in London, I got to see it in theaters, which I was very grateful for. It reminded me a lot of The Zone of Interest in that I waited for the credits to be over and I got up and everyone was still sitting there. And it was just kind of like no one could really move after it. And I think that's because of a few things. I think getting to see this friendship between a Palestinian man and an Israeli man, getting to see that and how that changed and how it progressed and how they each responded to these Israeli soldiers just completely demolishing and tearing down these homes on the West Bank. It just will stick with me for a really, really long time. And seeing how Basil's family and friends in Gaza would react to Yuval and the conversations they would have with him, I thought that that was really, really unique for this documentary. And also, it combines this archival footage with this cinema verite style. So I thought just from a filmmaking perspective, it was the best of the bunch, too. So I would go with No Other Land.
Our next category is animated feature. Our precursors here, we have the Annie Awards and then animated feature at multiple ceremonies, including the Golden Globes, BAFTA, and Critics' Choice. Our nominees this year, we have Flow, Inside Out 2, Memoir of a Snail, Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul, and The Wild Robot. Starting with Flow, we mentioned in International Feature, Gintz Zilbalotis. This is his second nomination. And then Matisse Kaza, Ron Dyens, and Gregory Zalkman. They are all first-time nominees.
Next, we have Inside Out 2. Our nominees here, we have Kelsey Mann. This is his first nomination. And Mark Nielsen. He won one Oscar for Toy Story 4, and this is his second nomination. Description here, a sequel that features Riley entering puberty and experiencing brand new, more complex emotions as a result. As Riley tries to adapt to her teenage years, her old emotions try to adapt to the possibility of being replaced. And this was directed by nominee Kelsey Mann.
With Memoir of a Snail, the director Adam Elliott, he has one win in animated short film for Harvey Crumpet. And this is his second nomination. And we also have Liz Kearney. This is her first nomination. Description, a bittersweet memoir of a melancholic woman called Grace Poodle, a hoarder of snails, romance novels, and guinea pigs.
Our next nominee is Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul. Our nominees here are Nick Park. He has four wins for Creature Comforts, Wallace and Gromit: The Wrong Trousers, and Wallace and Gromit: A Close Shave in animated short, and Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit in animated feature. And he also has three other nominations. Merlin Crossingham, this is his first nomination, and Richard Beak, this is his first nomination. Description here, top dog Gromit springs into action to save his master when Wallace's high-tech invention goes rogue and he's framed for a series of suspicious crimes.
And last but not least, The Wild Robot. This is directed by Chris Sanders. This is his fourth nomination. And Jeff Herman, this is his first nomination. Description here, after a shipwreck, an intelligent robot called Roz is stranded on an uninhabited island. To survive the harsh environment, Roz bonds with the island's animals and cares for an orphaned baby goose. What do you think of this bunch of nominees?
I actually think that these nominees are some of the strongest we've had in the category in a really long time. Especially for me, The Wild Robot and Flow are practically perfect animated films. I love them. They were both in my top 20, I would say, of the year last year. And I would maybe even put them in my best picture lineup. I liked them that much. And I also really like Wallace and Gromit, too. I'm a little bit lower on Memoir of a Snail than others. I found it really bleak. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, just not what I was expecting necessarily, but I'm also glad that it's here because I love the animation style. The lowest I am on a film here really is Inside Out 2, but I still enjoyed my time with that movie. It just doesn't measure up necessarily to something like The Wild Robot or to Flow. And I think what The Wild Robot, Flow, and Wallace and Gromit: Vengeance Most Foul have in common for me is that I think kids and adults could really connect with these movies. I feel like the filmmakers did a really great job with the animation and how different it felt or how signature it felt to the story, but also with the themes and the humor of some of these films too, especially The Wild Robot and Wallace and Gromit. I found there were a lot of jokes in there that might, you know, go over kids' heads, but would make adults laugh. And I always like when that happens in an animated film. So I like these overall. What do you think?
I like most of them too. It's kind of how I feel about international features. Like most of them are really good. And then there's one that I don't really care for. Have you seen Harvey Crumpet or Mary and Max from Adam Elliott?
I have not actually.
So maybe that's why animated feature is a category that I love returning to, because growing up, I think some of those animated features like Harvey Crumpet or The Illusionist or The Triplets of Belleville, I loved all those movies and I saw those growing up. So I think in some of these weirder animated films like Memoir of a Snail, it is bleak, but it's his animation style. It's definitely for adults. You have these like naked clay humans, which is very weird, but it's just a unique vision, I think. And I cried at the end of this movie. I think the ending is a touching finale for going through this very sad story. Some of the other ones, we've talked about The Wild Robot before. That's my favorite movie of the year, so I'm obviously very happy it's here. Wallace and Gromit is, I think, under 80 minutes long, which is so nice. obviously very cute. And Flo, like I said before, I need to rewatch that movie. Inside Out 2, I could be okay with it not being here, but it did pass $1 billion at the box office, so it does make sense that that's here and maybe not something like Moana 2, which also did very well. But I think I was surprised by how much people loved Inside Out 2, since I really loved the first one, I would say more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think the first one is stronger. So what would your write-in vote be?
My write-in vote would be Mars Express, this very intense anime-like film that has elements of Stanley Kubrick and David Fincher. It really bowled me over. It's very complex, but it's a story that as I watched it, I just felt like I was understanding so much about humanity. It has this dystopian setting. It's a thriller. It's part murder mystery. There's a lot to it, but by the end of the movie, I was just so in awe, and I really need more people to see this movie. Because again, it gets put in a corner because it's an animated film, but it has so many great original ideas that are, again, so timely, like a lot of the other movies we've talked about today. What would your write-in vote be?
I need to see Mars Express because we're in a similar situation that we were in last year where it's difficult for me to have a write-in vote because...
Well, I can write in too then.
Okay, I have one other animated film that I saw this year outside of the five, but if you have another one, you can write in too. My other film that I saw outside of these five, an animated feature, was called That Christmas, which is a Netflix...
That's a good one. Okay.
Anime. It's cute. I thought it was really cute. One of those kids' Christmas movies where everything goes awry. It is very, very British. It's set on Wellington on Sea. And there are these two twins. One is terrible. One is like really good, but very anxious. Of course, Santa is involved. And there's a Scrooge-like teacher. I'm not making this sound that appealing, but it is really cute. But yeah, I guess I would write that in because I'm so bad with catching up with animated films every year.
I was going to say, half jokingly, Transformers 1, which I honestly really did like. But
people liked that.
Yeah, it was very fun. It's funny. It's for kids and adults. But I do like your write-in vote. I thought that Christmas was... also very cute in a similar way for kids and adults. What do you think should win?
I am between Flo and The Wild Robot, but I'm going to give the edge to The Wild Robot because I didn't expect to be so emotionally moved by a film like that. And I feel like everything from the animation and how it looks like just this beautiful watercolor painting to the themes around motherhood and growing up and being different, I thought were so effective and so surprising. And I love the score. I love the sound work that we've talked about. Lupita Nyong'o's voice performance. I would go with The Wild Robot. What about you?
I would also go with The Wild Robot. Again, it's my favorite movie of the year. And this is a case where I want the studio film to win. I know it's not usually how it goes. And I love that people are really supporting Flo and that movie has won at different ceremonies. But I was just so floored by The Wild Robot. I saw it twice in a week. I've seen it multiple times since. And it's just one that makes me feel so full inside. It's so heartwarming. And all of those themes that you mentioned. It's one that I will cherish for many, many years.
I love that. It's so good. So now getting into our shorts categories, we'll start with live action short. All of our creators are first time nominees, which is really cool. Our nominees are Alien, Anuja, I'm Not a Robot, The Last Ranger, and The Man Who Could Not Remain Silent. Alien, our nominees here are Sam and David Cutler Kreutz. This short is about a young couple who face up to and deal with a dangerous immigration process. And this is on Vimeo.
Next, we have Anuja. This is by Adam J. Graves and Suchitra Mattai. Description here, when a gifted 9-year-old girl who works in a garment factory is offered a once-in-a-lifetime chance to attend school, she is forced to make a heart-wrenching decision that will determine her and her sister's fate. And this is on Netflix.
I'm Not a Robot. Our nominees here are Victoria Warmerdam and Trent. Description here, after repeatedly failing CAPTCHA tests, music producer Lara becomes obsessed with a disturbing question. Could she be a robot? And this is on The New Yorker and YouTube.
For The Last Ranger, this is by Cindy Lee and Darwin Shaw. Description here, when young Letha is introduced to the magic of a game reserve by the last remaining ranger, they are ambushed by poachers. In the ensuing battle to save the rhinos, Letha discovers a terrible secret.
And lastly, we have The Man Who Could Not Remain Silent. Our nominees here are Nebojsa Slijepcevich and Daniel Peck. Sorry for the pronunciations there. The description here, a passenger train is stopped by paramilitary forces in an ethnic cleansing operation in Bosnia and Herzegovina, 1993. As they haul off innocent civilians, only one man out of 500 passengers dares to stand up to them. So what do you think of these shorts as a whole?
We have some interesting subject matter, I will say that. Sometimes our shorts categories are pretty dicey. But I think a lot of these, again, we have some that are touching on important political matters, especially with Alien or Alien. I like how that title kind of plays with what it's about also with immigration. And that was my favorite of this group. I'll just say what I think should win was that. Also for how it was shot, it's a very intense 15 minutes. The other one that I was really intrigued by was I'm Not a Robot, which by the description alone sounds so interesting. And seeing it actually played out worked so well for me. It has this really dark humor aspect to it. And I think it was unfortunate for when I watched this, because the following day I went and saw a companion and they are basically identical stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was lower on companion because I had seen the short and because it had obviously come out earlier than that film. And that is a fun film, but I think the ideas here are just concentrated a little bit better and really makes you think of the integration of AI into society and the effects that that can have on you as a person. What did you think of this group of nominees?
Yeah, it's funny because I'm Not a Robot. I saw after Companion, but when I was watching it, I couldn't help but think of that movie. And I just, as I was watching the short, thought, oh, Companion totally could have been a short. They drag it out just a little bit. Yeah. Like there are some extended sequences in that movie where you think, mm-hmm. okay, I get it. I know where this is going.
Yeah.
I think though in that movie, Sophie Thatcher, I just love her. I think she's pretty great and one of our most exciting young actresses and scream queens. But yeah, I think I also preferred the short, I Am Not a Robot, because I think the beginning of it too is just like is so compelling of having her fail the CAPTCHA test, because it's something I always think of every time I take one of those tests is like, how does this know? Or I'll click one box wrong and I'll have to redo it. I'm like, wait a second. I definitely clicked all of the pictures with the trucks in them. But again, yeah, that idea that you check the box, I am not a robot, is just a fun concept, I think, for a short.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Anuja reminded me a lot of those kinds of live action shorts we get every year where it could also feel like a documentary short about, you know, a really timely topic of a particular area and that has, I think, a really good story at the center of it. But I think the one that I kept coming back to is, oh, this is the Red, White, and Blue of this year, for instance, that we had last year, like the one that addresses a big issue of the moment was Alien. That short is so tense. And it's horrible when you see them go in for their green card interview, this couple, and you just know what's going to happen. But the way that it plays out, I think, is just even worse than you can imagine. And again, the short film ending with this fact that this type of trickery happens all the time, that these ICE agents arrest people at their green card interview, which is a requirement for them. It's like they are summoned to this interview only for it to be a trap, really. I thought that was pretty horrifying.
And in terms of predictions, the shorts are definitely the hardest to predict. I'm curious if Inuja could win because it has Netflix behind it, also Mindy Kaling behind it. And last year we saw The Wonderful World of Henry Sugar win here, also with Netflix. So I'm keeping my eye on that one also for now. What do you think should win?
I'm going to go with I'm Not a Robot. I really like the concept. I thought the execution was great. I also thought that the performance by the lead actress was really good in it too. And again, I think it only improved after seeing Companion, really. It's just such a topical idea that's executed really creatively.
Next up, we have animated short film. Our nominees here, we have Beautiful Men, In the Shadow of the Cypress, Magic Candies, Wander to Wonder, and Yuck. Again, all of our nominees here and all of our creators are first-time nominees. For Beautiful Men, we have Nicholas Cuppins and Brecht von Elslande. Description here, the insecurities of three bald brothers intensify during their stay in an Istanbul hotel for hair transplants.
In the Shadow of the Cypress, our nominees here are Shireen Sohani and Hossein Molayemi. Living in a house by the sea with his daughter, a former captain who has post-traumatic stress disorder, leads a tough and secluded life.
For Magic Candies, we have Daisuke Nishio and Takashi Washio. The other kids at the park never ask Dong Dong to play. He's fine just playing marbles on his own, though. One day, he buys a bag of colorful candies instead of new marbles. The first time he pops one of them into his mouth, his old sofa starts talking to him. The two share an unexpected conversation before the sweet melts away. As it happens, the people, animals, and objects in Dong Dong's life have a lot to say. With each candy, he discovers new voices and perspectives, including his own. Heartfelt and totally strange, Magic Candies will have you rethinking how you treat the objects and others in your life.
Wander to Wonder, our nominees here are Nina Gantz and Stianette Boxlopper. In the 1980s, Mary, Billy Budd, and Fumbleton starred in the children's television program Wander to Wonder. They are left alone in the studio after the show's originator passed away.
And for Yuck, we have Loic Espuche and Juliette Marquette. Couples kissing on the mouth are gross, and the worst is you can't miss them. When people are about to kiss, their lips become all pink and shiny. Little Leo laughs at them, just like all the kids at summer camp, but he has a secret he won't tell his friends. His own mouth has actually begun glistening. And in reality, Leo desperately wants to give kissing a try. Some interesting shorts. What do you think of this collection?
They're always, always interesting shorts in this category. I actually saw this collection in theaters, so I try to see at least one group in theaters every year. It's just a fun thing that I do every Oscar season. And this year I did the animated group, and some of them I really liked, and others I thought, oh God, here we go again. This is just classic, classic animated short territory here. And I think my two favorites of the group were Yuck and Magic Candies, because I just like the execution and the animation and the stories themselves. Yuck, it was so funny, I think, just thinking about like the idea of living in a world where if you want to kiss someone, your mouth literally lights up and becomes this like glittery neon thing. I'm like, oh my God, thank God we don't live in a world like that. But I think that the way that they show that in the short is really cute. And I think the way that these two kids like come to realize they like each other and it's just a normal part of growing up, I thought that that was really sweet. And in the same way for Magic Candies, that one just felt very wholesome and different and had this almost like Capra-esque warmth to it of what happens when you get to have conversations with people or things that you wouldn't otherwise get to without this sort of magic or divine intervention. So I really liked that. And I liked the animation a lot too. I loved the dog. That was definitely the highlight for me. What about you?
Those two were my favorites too. So I'm glad we align because we haven't talked about any of these yet. Those were just so fun. I think what surprised me most was with Yuck. It makes sense that all of these kids think kissing is gross, but it's as they start to come of age where they kind of like each other and then they make fun of each other for having crushes. But there was this really beautiful queer sequence in the film where one kid oversees these two soccer players and their lips start to light up, and then their friend comes by and they have to suppress that. So I think that was, in a 20-second sequence, you're saying so much about reality, and I think how he feels sad in that moment because of what he saw is so true to life. Magic Candies, I loved the animation there, and having a conversation with your couch and dog and your grandma that has passed away through bubblegum. It's just such an interesting idea. So I will say, for me, in terms of what I want to win, it's between those two. I always think back to the windshield wiper and how that won a few years ago, and I just never understood that win. But I will say, I don't think any of these nominees are that bad.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like these two shorts as much, Wander to Wonder and In the Shadow of the Cypress. I actually really liked the animation. It was just the story that kept me from being really engaged, but I like how different the animation styles were. And I have one comment on Beautiful Men, which is that I could not stop thinking about Travis Kelce the entire time I was watching because when he debuted his new hair going into the Super Bowl, everyone was commenting on how he just took a trip to Turkey for the hair transplant. So of course, when this started and they're at this hotel in Istanbul waiting for their appointments, I just, my mind completely, you know, wandered to wonder about Travis Kelce.
And what do you think should win?
I think Magic Candies should win. That was my favorite of the group. I really liked the animation style and just the overall message of it. I thought it was really sweet and engaging. What about you?
I think I would give Magic Candies the edge too. Yuck is very cute, but I think Magic Candies, I left watching that thinking about it more.
And our last category, we have documentary short. Our nominees here, we have Death by Numbers, I Am Ready Warden, Incident, Instruments of a Beating Heart, and The Only Girl in the Orchestra. Death by Numbers, our nominees here are Kim A. Snyder and Janique L. Robillard. They are both first-time nominees. 4 years after being shot with an AR-15 in her high school, Samantha Fuentes reckons with existential questions of hatred and justice as she prepares to confront her shooter.
For I Am Ready Warden, our nominees, we have Smriti Mundra. This is her second nomination, and Maya Nyup. This is her first nomination. Description here, John Henry Ramirez is convicted of murder and sentenced to death in the state of Texas. During his incarceration, Ramirez tries to reach out to his victim's son while also preparing to say goodbye to his family. This is on Paramount Plus.
Next, we have Incident. Our nominees here are Bill Morrison and Jamie Calvin. They are both first-time nominees. Incident reconstructs a 2018 police shooting in Chicago, reassembling the event and its immediate aftermath from a variety of sources, including surveillance, CCTV, dashboard, and body-worn cameras as a synchronized split-screen montage. And this is on The New Yorker. You can watch it on YouTube.
We also have Instruments of a Beating Heart. This is by Emma Ryan Yamazaki. This is her first nomination. And Eric Nayari. This is his second nomination, but first in the category. You'll recognize his name from Black Box Diaries. So Emma directed the short and co-produced and edited Black Box Diaries, and Eric produced both of those projects. Description here, first graders in a Tokyo public elementary school are presented with a challenge for their final semester, performing Ode to Joy at the ceremony for the new incoming first graders. Ayame, who often struggles to keep up with the group, is determined to play a major part, the big drum. And this is on the New York Times.
And our last short, we have The Only Girl in the Orchestra. Our nominees here are Molly O'Brien and Lisa Remington. They are both first-time nominees. This unsung hero story celebrates the trailblazing musician Oren O'Brien and the double bass she plays. And this is available on Netflix. So what did you think of this group of nominees as a whole?
I like that we have variety here, and you know, documentary can be really bleak sometimes, and some of them are, but we do also have some fun topics as well here. The only girl in the orchestra, I would say, is kind of like The Last Repair Shop from last year, in that it talks about the importance of music and the first female double bassist for the New York Symphony. The trouble with that one, though, the subject they cover doesn't really want to be covered, so it kind of makes watching a little difficult. Another musician with Instruments of a Beating Heart, this girl is incredibly adorable, and you just want her to succeed at playing this piece, learn the music. I felt like the teacher was awful to her when he scolded her in front of the entire class for not practicing at home. But this was an enjoyable short. It may not be saying something super serious like Incident, which I think is the most important short that we've talked about today. I think it's recreation of the Chicago police shooting and how it puts together all of those different camera sources just proves why we need cops to wear body cameras at all times. Because what you hear them talk about is truly insane when this happens. What do you think of this group?
Yeah, it's, for me, Incident, what you just mentioned with the body cam footage. I think that the change in camera source or feed, the editing, the change in sound is pretty phenomenal. But what I came away from the short really thinking about is the justifications and guilt that these police officers do or don't feel, and how they will try to gas each other up and say, you didn't do anything wrong, when the one officer tells them to shut off their body cams. Oh my God. It's insane. It's insane. It really is. And we know that this happens, but I think to see it and experience it in real time in the way that this doc is structured is pretty remarkable. Instruments of a Beating Heart, I call that one Whiplash for kids. I could not stop thinking about Damien Chazelle's Whiplash.
Oh my God, I was watching this
poor girl cry when her teacher is being so mean to her in front of her whole class. She was so anxious. I felt so badly for her. The only girl in the orchestra, I just kept thinking of Tar. Naturally, the Leonard Bernstein references, her apartment with those instruments and all those books. But yeah, I mean, she says multiple times, Orin O'Brien, the subject, that she doesn't like fame. She doesn't want attention. She's never wanted that. Both of her parents were actors. They were both in the film industry, and they were really drawn to that. But she never has been, and that's actually why she sought out music. It makes you think, okay, well then why is she the subject of this short? It just feels like her niece just wanted to make this movie, but I don't really know if she wanted to be a part of it, and it doesn't really feel like it. I haven't been able to see Death by Numbers, I'll just say that, because it's not available anywhere. I couldn't find it anywhere, so I wish I could see that one, and hopefully I will be able to before the Oscars. I'm Ready, Warden just felt very confused in what it was trying to do and to say, I think, for me, that I couldn't really connect with that one. But I think Incident and Instruments of a Beating Heart were actually my two favorites.
If you had to pick one, which do you think should win?
I think Incident should win pretty easily. I think just in terms of form and in subject matter and what they accomplished there, I'll be thinking about that one for a very long time. What do you think should win?
I totally agree. Incident, I really hope it wins. It's one that I will recommend everybody see because it is very jarring to watch, especially with all of the police brutality that has come to light, I would say, more in the past few years. But I would say it's the best of the bunch also.
Great. Well, that was our episode on International Animated and Documentary Feature and all three of our shorts categories. We only have one more episode to go in our contender series. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we have our final Oscar contenders episode. We will be talking about original and adapted screenplay, best director, and finally, best picture.
Yeah, we're nearing the end. It's been really fun covering everything. Try to see as many of the nominees that we've talked about today as you can, either streaming online, some of the international features and documentaries will come to theaters shortly. Thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Blue Sky. We have bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWild and updated Oscar predictions on our website at oscarwild.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.